Blog Talk Radio.
It's that time. We have the people.
This is Eric from Moana.
This is Priscilla Lima.
This is Tim Jensen with Pepperdine Volleyball.
The story in real time.
I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
I'm not retiring, people.
You're listening to The Net Line with Barney.
I dominated.
Peter.
We're into that because we're horny for volleyball.
Reed.
Where's Pretty? You promised me he'd be on the show today.
And DJ Rouché.
The baddest DJ in the land.
It's The Net Live right now.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. DJ Rouché, that was fun.
Cut a new little twist into there.
I dominated.
I knew you guys would be happy about that. Get you fired up for today.
I like that. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Net Live. It is the 15th of August, 2011. We are here in the home court. Myself, Kevin Barnett, joined by Chris Dieter McGee. Fresh off a trip to Portland, and DJ Rouché, fresh off an album release and a huge pool party in Fullerton yesterday.
You know, Kevin, I think when I said we were horny for volleyball a couple weeks ago, it was Jay Roche's favorite thing that I've ever said in our 9 years together, because he cut that immediately into the open.
And I was speechless, bro. Like, I was trying not to laugh into the microphone really loud. And when I thought about it at home later, I laughed again to myself out loud.
You almost had to lay down on the couch.
I did.
To avoid the microphone.
Awesome.
Kevin, I don't know what kind of weekend you had, and we'll get to that. And, of course, Seaside was insane, but I feel like we got to get into the pool party.
I was invited. Were you invited?
No.
I just couldn't get a sitter. I spent time with the boys doing a little surfing and stuff, but I was definitely on the invite list.
Yeah, so was I, actually.
Thank you for verifying that. I was about to get upset.
I don't want Barney to get all excited like you were invited somewhere that I wasn't.
Oh, man, I'm such a big time. Yeah,
let's,
eater.
Let's not get crazy.
Yeah, one of my DJs and I, this is our third year doing a mixtape together, and every year we've done a celebration. This year we decided to do a pool party. A buddy of mine has a house in Fullerton with a pool that overlooks all of Orange County.
Cool.
Perfect location. We had about 70 people show up. A couple of my DJs opened, and then me and my guy, DJ Styles, performed our mix live. And you can get it for free download, promotional use only, at djrouché.com.
Nice.
You know why I'm not
so
wearing my...
we're going to hear some of that today, though.
You know why I'm not wearing my Net Live t-shirts like you guys are?
Why?
Because mine are both dirty.
Because you wore them this weekend.
That was a fumble that I made. I did not have them clean for this weekend. And when I got to Seaside, I thought, what a failure. Failure.
So you didn't wear them in Seaside. You actually left them home.
No, but I did have a guy come up to me, a few guys come up and say that they like the show and stuff.
Killer.
I gave out some free stuff for people that listen to the show.
I like it.
Yeah.
Hey, let's get to what you're going to have on the show today. We've got Beach, Olympic test event. We'll hear more about the Seaside huge amateur event that went on up in Oregon, but there was a Beach Olympic test event. They test the venues 1 year out. We'll hear head coach Alan Knife talk about that later in the program on the men's side. We have an interview with him coming up on the show today. But the women were out there testing the beach facilities. Talk a little bit about indoor women's Grand Prix. Weekend number two is actually in the books. I saw weekend number one, be doing weekend number two coming up this week, but we can talk a bit about them. 35 years of Volleyball Magazine continuing. This time it's an awesome, awesome episode. September 1993. And there is more awesomeness in that one magazine than I've seen in a very long time. Got Kent on the cover, Kent Steffes digging a ball, taking it to the next level. There are crazy
Bushler.
Ads. There's Bushler. There's so much stuff in there. There's Coley Kyman for Geeter. You can maybe cut that picture out or something.
My Northridge Matador days. We had lost the title that year.
1993 college preview for the women's side and apps, because we're going to have our first college volleyball weekly coming up. Mike Sondheimer will be a correspondent. You got to hear him on the men this past springtime. He will no, don't tear anything out. He will be a part of the women's college volleyball weekly. There's a pullout poster in there. I said, don't pull the poster out though. We'll get in trouble with.
Will the Hermosa
magazine.
Open look like this?
We're going to talk
this weekend
about that because
the Hermosa Corona is coming up.
The Hermosa Open right there. That must be what 50,000 people plus.
That's a lot of people
in the stands. Unbelievable. So lots of good stuff coming there. And as I mentioned, head coach Alan Knipe of the national team, 20 minutes with him. He's in practice right now. We were recording 20 minutes with him this morning, talking about World League, talking about the upcoming Norsecas.
You recorded 20 minutes.
I did. Were you going to be here at 8:30 this morning on the
no,
mic?
No, I just didn't even have a chance at it.
So we've got a lot of good stuff coming up. Also going to hear from Vinny Lopes. He's a guy who writes Off the Block, a blog. He's going to tell us about the recently concluded Boys International Tournament, where the U.S. boys team did very well. And we'll have Benjamin Weintraub. He's a guy from Echo Entertainment. I think now works on your show, Geeter, but has worked on World League the last few years. He's an editor. He's been responsible for cutting. So if you want to know about the content, we've had some questions there about how content is chosen, how these matches are cut, the quality of video, all those kinds of things. We're going to talk to Ben about those issues and kind of give you some insight into how volleyball is produced and post-produced for television.
You know, sadly, we've lost, as someone is mentioning on our message board, we've lost some of our live listeners because college volleyball is underway, Barney. So a lot of coaches that listen to us live are in the gym right now. This is probably the final week of Double Days because the season is upon us, Jay Roche. And I know you get excited.
Super
about
excited.
What ends indoor.
Yeah.
I do.
I know you do.
Okay.
I'm just happy that there's volleyball.
I think it's the biggest, healthiest part of volleyball in the United States. Women's college indoor.
You know what was happening a year ago?
Yeah, yeah.
On this show?
Yeah.
A year ago today?
You were dressed in black.
College volleyball was starting. The AVP closed its doors over the weekend. And we had a lot of people in the
Did you cry when
board.
That happened?
It was sort of like a funeral. We had people calling in, and it literally was like almost eulogizing the AVP.
Did you cry? I didn't cry.
I didn't cry.
Geeter?
I was more ticked off because I think we got put on hold that week.
I was sad and I was bummed.
Actually, no, we talked to Jason Hodel and Mike Dodd, I believe, the first week. The second week was when we got put on hold by AVP owner Nick Lewin, current AVP owner Nick Lewin. Where's that at, by the way? That was a good question during the week. Somebody put up on the Facebook, facebook.com/thenetlive, was what's the state of the beach now? And I think we've covered that, but what's the state of the AVP right now is really the question. And I think nowhere is maybe the state of the AVP. They were talking about...
Tom Stolfus was there this weekend in CSUN.
Talking about that one tournament in Huntington in October. I've heard nothing since. I haven't been to the website in a while. And they had sand berms up there that we've since been informed that they cannot do. There's no way that Huntington would let you do that to the sand. So I don't know where that whole thing is. We've heard that they're out there trying to get the thing sold or thinking they're going to run tournaments. Nick Lewin's still in charge in a bathroom somewhere in New York. We really don't know where that thing's at.
A bathroom in New York. Yeah, beach volleyball has definitely changed a lot in the past year, but I think, you know, as we go to the pretty much year to the day, Corona's having Hermosa this weekend. Albert's got tournaments still coming up with the NVL. He's got Virginia Beach. He's got Miami. Cuervo IMG USAV Pro Beach Volleyball Series has got Manhattan Open coming up in 2 weeks. I think that's going to be a real interesting benchmark to see where we are. I mean, Manhattan, that no matter who's been running it, it's always been a big draw. Last year they had not as many people, obviously, because the AVP folded up tent a couple weeks before it, but they ended up running a tournament anyway. So it'll be real interesting to see back-to-back weeks here what Hermosa looks like for Corona and what Manhattan looks like for Cuervo. It'll be real real interesting to see how many people come out and how many people know about it. Because usually when the Manhattan comes out and Hermosa comes out, everyone knows. You know, I mean, you never have to worry about a crowd when you're Hermosa Manhattan. So I think we'll know a lot more in a couple weeks. Our TV show starting on Versus August 19th.
Awesome.
Friday night. So we've already shot two of them. So that's going to be kind of cool for me. But, yeah, it's you know, I mean, you look at a year ago, I didn't think there'd be any beach volleyball ever again. So it's funny how things kind of just pop up. You know, I'm all of a sudden Albert got something going, and, you know, Corona's been going for a few years. And then out of nowhere, Cuervo and IMG partnered up, and now they're going to have four tournaments and have a TV show. So I don't know. I feel like there's at least some positives moving forward when it comes to beach volleyball, especially where I just got back from Seaside, Oregon. 973 teams,
wow.
Which is a world record amateur tournament. There's a 32-team men's open draw. Adam Roberts and Kevin McCullough beat Dana Camacho and John Moran in the final. Andy McGuire from UCSB, and who's been on this show, and Joey Dexter got third. And the women, there wasn't as many women's opens teams. Jen Schneider and Crystal Engel won. But there's every division you guys could fathom they had. Player coach, co-ed fours, you know, single gender fours, everything you can think of, A, B, novice, masters, over 60, over 45, over 50. It's just 115 courts line the beach in Seaside, Oregon, and it is a good time. It's a great party. I got to announce with John Lee, and it's really a good time. I was telling you guys off the air that on Saturday at about 5 o'clock when the finals are starting, the entire beach, you know, the berms, that's where Hans got the idea for the berms.
Right.
The berms go up really, really high, and people are there from 7 in the morning Friday with their chairs all the way till Sunday. And it's packed, and everyone's having a great time. It's controlled chaos. You're allowed to drink on the beach, but not up top. So everyone kind of drinks right there. They throw away their trash. It's really an amazing sight, but people have been coming there forever. It's a 30-year anniversary. It's tradition. People come from Alki Beach in West Seattle, from all over the Northwest. And they love beach volleyball. I mean, you looked at little kids on up to grandmas playing. It blew my mind. Blew my mind. So when you look at that, you go, God, there are some good things going on in beach volleyball.
I don't think we're learning anything new there. I think we've known for a long time the participation numbers are there. Absolutely, 100%. The participation is huge in this sport. The question is, will they spectate? We know they'll spectate if they're at the event playing, but will they show up just to watch? Will they come to see professionals do what they do? And this is something I've encountered for a very long time in this sport, that people love to play, but they don't really have a good grasp at what it takes to be a professional and how much higher the level really is when you get to professional beach, professional indoor, even women's college, men's college, how much higher that level is than their local YMCA. And I think it's due to lack of visibility of the sport at its highest level. You don't see it on TV enough. Now, that has changed, I think, in recent years, because indoor has been on now more than it ever has been, with the Universal Sports package, with World League being on all the time. Things have come along, and I think people are getting a little better grasp of it, but I still don't think they watch enough to really realize how good Clay Stanley is, how good Phil Dahlhauser is, how good Logan Thom is at this game. I mean, there's all those people out there, how great Jen Kessie is. I mean, all that stuff, right? See? It's just not out there enough for people to really realize. And what's funny to me is watching some of this lockout stuff from the NBA, and you see these guys in camps or in adult camps, kid camps. They're dunking on kids. They're swatting kids. And everybody on SportsCenter likes to make fun of it. Oh, they're getting off their rocks by blocking 11-year-olds. You go, no, that 11-year-old is going to talk about getting blocked by LeBron James or Dwayne Wade or whoever it is. He's going to talk about that for the rest of his life, essentially, about getting blocked by this guy. And I think there needs to be that type of realization about how good these people are. And I think with basketball, that's there. And so it is celebrated so much when, in a game to three, some executive beats Michael Jordan.
Never happened.
It did happen. In his own camp.
Michael killed that guy afterwards, if that's the case. That guy has never been seen since. Sorry. Throw you off your rhythm. I like what you're saying, though. I agree on everything you're saying, but I also think at the pro level, especially beach, because I was there a lot more, they make it look really easy. Watching this play,
right.
It looks easy.
That's what's interesting about Seaside. You know, Ayal Zanette played in this tournament, and Ayal's got a Final Four to his credit. He got there with Mike Morrison, I think, 09 Coney Island. He's a good volleyball player. He just looked smoother, looked more athletic, just was a different level. When you combine these tournaments, like, you know, this Open and Seaside with guys who've been playing their whole lives, but they're not playing at that AVP level, and then you bring in Adam Roberts and you bring in Ayal Zemet and guys like that have played on the AVP, they look so much better. And those aren't our best players; they're good players, but they're 13th and 9th on the AVP average. So it's pretty amazing to see, you know, if Sean Rosenthal was in Seaside or Phil, I mean, people would freak. They wouldn't know what to do.
Oh, they have no clue.
Yeah. So it's really cool to see, you know, these guys from Alki Beach who are good players. Guys from Canada came down, got a fifth. Good players. And are right there, but it's great to see that there is another level, you know?
This is why I really liked when I was on the team, we did a couple of demonstrations at Boys Junior Nationals or Girls Junior Nationals at JO's because it was in Denver. So we drove up. We did an exhibition.
I remember.
People get a handle on that. Oh. You know, Clay Stanley goes up. I go up. Mike Lambert, Dan Landry, Chip McCaw. I mean, a setter. It goes up and hits a ball. Loy is setting. You get a feel for how good that group really, really is. Then there's no way to have that unless you're actually there. And then I thought it was great that we took a team, there were several other national team players, and this has happened since, that went to adult nationals in 1998, I want to say, Tucson, 99 maybe, Tucson.
You remember that?
Yeah. I've got some hardware in the garage from that.
Unbelievable.
But we went down. We went as T-Town from Tulsa. We had Chip McCaw's mom coach us. We ran a 6'2". We put a wrestler who'd never played volleyball in as our DS. We beat everybody. We had people playing out of position.
I don't think you beat Paul Mitchell.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think so.
I don't know that we played you.
Okay. Thought we won that year, but go on.
You did not win. Just clarification. But that type of touch is necessary. I know the women have taken an A2 team to adult nationals for a long time. And I think that's important for the community. Not to go out and stomp somebody or play against, you know, Fred from Tulsa who's out of shape or whatever, but to get out there and give people some sort of context for this sport and what the professionals are really doing.
Can I give you an example?
Yeah.
3 weeks ago at the C-Right tournament. It's a four-man tournament, four-person tournament in Hermosa Beach. A lot of fun. Played with, and I know Barnett's going to go, name drop. Played with Bree Ladd, who used to play volleyball for Arizona, and she dates Luke Walton. Luke and his roommate Nate, right? And those guys are new to volleyball, been playing a couple years, love it. But, you know, as we say, Jeremy, horny for volleyball, right? We played against Fenoy.
As we say.
Fenoy had a D on his team that he literally almost put on the strand. I mean, the guy could not have been any farther off. If he stepped one step more, he'd been off the court by 9 feet.
Fenoy said,
a gal named Scotty, who we all know, Scotty Wells, who's a Hermosa Beach gal, and then a random setter. Fenoy beat us probably 11-5.
By himself,
basically. I was setting. And Luke and Nate actually played pretty well. I mean, they were bombing ball. They just could not believe what Fenoy did to them. Like, he was just always in the right spot. He would dig their biggest heat easily and then chop them down. He barely even – I mean, Fenoy went to the finals of this tournament, lost to Bob Samuelson. But, you know, afterwards they were just like, oh, my God. I'm like, listen, you guys just got baptized, basically, by Fenoy. But they were just like – I mean, we knew he was good, but he's 43. And I'm like, but you guys don't understand, like – Luke, imagine Fenoy coming onto the basketball court and going, let's play one-on-one, Luke.
And Fenoy's good at basketball.
What that score would be, it'd be 15-1 in favor of Luke. So, you know, Fenoy is a gold medalist in our sport. But they were just like, oh, my God, he's in. Like, they were completely – could not stop talking about it for days. Like, what if we did this? How did he do that? I'm like, you guys, he knew what you were doing before you did. You don't have a clue how to play this game.
Right.
Like, he's going, oh, that's where they're going to hit. I'll be standing right there, and I'll shoot it back over their head.
You know what's funny? At least Luke Walton is incredible in his own right, at his own thing.
Yeah.
And so I understand that. As an elite athlete, you have an opinion of yourself because you're so good at what you do that you could do something else many times when you're younger. Eventually, I think you learn, but when you're younger. And we've touched on some of those funny things that have happened throughout the years with volleyball athletes thinking they could dominate something else. And I think it's very true for basketball players.
Yeah.
And that doesn't frustrate me. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
What frustrates me is people who play their local YMCA and think, hey, I got a buddy. He's pretty good. He dominates at our church league, and I want to get him a try on the national team. Really? Tell him to make sure he wears a helmet when he comes in.
Dominates the church league.
Because we don't want him getting a serious concussion. We'd like to prevent that. Although he may already have brain damage because he thinks he can compete. That's the kind of stuff that frustrated me. And I hope that it's changing because of the proliferation of television.
Yeah.
Would somebody really come up to you and say, I have a guy that dominates our church league?
100% happened in Colorado Springs. The guy did not say church league. The guy said, hey, I got a buddy. He's really good. Could he get a tryout?
Wow.
Absolutely. 100%, I was there. I did not hear
you know
it
what?
From someone. It was
we
said
may,
to me.
We may have missed out on the next Karchka ride because we were blind. Someone makes a great point on the board when I was looking at it a second ago. That's why the six-man is a lot of fun, And I've said that, and I'm
absolutely
actually talking to some people in Oregon about it who have never been. The Chapman brothers who run this tournament for years, you know, they've kind of made volleyball big up in the Northwest. You know, one of the brothers like, man, I've never been in the six man. And I was like, you know what's great about it? We had all these unbelievable guys on our team and, you know, some NBA guys and some like volleyball legend guys. And we're playing against Tropic Thunder, who these guys have never played in their lives, but they were having the best time because they were playing against Lambo and Furbringer and Luke was coming on the court, you know, and these guys were having the best time. And who cares? The score is 11-1. That's an opportunity for them to step on the court in play with the top players in the world.
And if they dig one ball,
yeah, exactly,
they're going to talk about that for the rest of their lives.
Exactly.
So good. Get out more of those events. That's what I think people should do. I wanted to get a little reaction to last week. We had Sunderland on the show. And my question, takeaway from Sunderland was, should we replace Geeter with Sunderland?
It's a great question.
Just a moment. And Will Sunderland get fewer parking tickets than you get for this program?
For sure, Sunday's way smarter in terms of parking, and he'll talk to you about it for an hour on where he parked. I think, because I listened to the show.
When you're on hold for 20 minutes?
Yeah. I think if you could just wake the audience up and get them involved and listen to the nuts and bolts of what you two are talking about, yeah, maybe they'll be into it. But for the love of God, don't ruin the show like that. I mean, you and Sunday together, I mean, I'm telling you guys, Millie fell asleep. I fell asleep. Jess was snoring. Luca was rolling around. I mean, we were bored. I was texting Jeremy saying, are they just replaying something or is this really happening? I mean, you two can tell. You guys are good friends and your broadcast partners, but man, it was long.
We were talking indoor. That's why it was long for you. And just for the record, I'd like to point out that Geeter was asleep. Jess was snoring. That's nice. And Millie was asleep, but Luke is still rolling around the floor. That's fine parenting, Mr. McGee. Was she down there with the matches? Maybe the controls to the stove.
Be careful what you wish for, Barney. We got some job opportunities, buddy. You don't want to lose me. You don't want to lose me. You don't want to have to make that call to Sunday.
All right, I've got a more serious question. We had a discussion about kind of
that
the coach.
That wasn't serious. My bad.
The coach fiscal discussion and making coaches responsible.
I listened to it. And I had the show on.
Well, you were a little bit part of that.
Yeah.
Any further thoughts on? I don't know. I think it's one of these ideas that could never happen.
How much did Trestle make?
Sign this. I don't know.
It was like $27 million or something.
Over five, 10 years or whatever it was.
Pretty incredible number.
He's not giving any of that back. Now, I did hear it may be Ohio State. One of them is going to actually return the money that they were paid by the NCAA. So kudos to that university, if it was them, for playing in a bowl game with ineligible players, which I think it was Ohio State, somebody in the chat let me know, that I heard on Sports Center. It's going to give back $350,000. But even still, $350,000. They made that back in jersey sales alone based on the fact that they appeared in that championship game.
Yeah, I just don't know where you start in how you set the precedent and what it would create. I think it looks good when we're talking about it. Like, yeah, they should be responsible. Reggie Bush should be responsible. The agent should be responsible. I mean, these guys should all have to be responsible if they get caught. You know? It was interesting talking to John Lee. I mean, if you got, you know, his brother Greg Lee played for John Wooden, played in the NBA, was also one of the great beach volleyball teams of all time, Greg Lee and Jim Mingus. The stuff that went on in the 60s and 70s, I mean, it's just been going on forever in college basketball. I mean, guys were getting free stuff. It's been going on forever. And if you don't think it happens, you're naive.
Every D1, D2, D3, I mean, all of them. Obviously not at the same level in D3. But when Reggie Bush is driving to practice with a brand new car rolling on 26s.
That wasn't mom and dad going down to the local dealership.
Yes.
Taking him out to West Coast Customs and saying, have at it, son. We're going to pay for this.
And I know we pick on Reggie Bush a lot just because that's recent, but are you telling me that the rest of the USC team wasn't taking things? He was the only one?
Hey, I say so what? You know, these guys generate so much income for everybody around them that it's no surprise that it's creeping in. I mean, you have these kids who are 18, 19, 20, who've come from nothing, all they know is the sport, basically. Most of them, many of them, I should say. They've been involved with the sport. I mean, forget school, forget other friends outside the sport. I mean, they've been doing AAU tournaments all summers and playing, and they're the focus of their school and the efforts, and they don't know anything else. And here comes a guy that says, I'm going to give you $50,000, or I'm going to give you this pimp car. LeBron James.
Yeah.
Before he left, right, there was a discussion of him going to college or not. He's driving a silver Hummer.
Yeah. I mean, you think LeBron didn't get anything before?
Kidding me? I mean, it's not a joke, and it is a big problem now because the money that they're getting, if they get a Hummer and $20,000 cash, that's a pittance compared to the money that's being made off their image at that age, even in high school. Now, LeBron is the rare example, but Oak Hill Academy, don't tell me they didn't roll in some cash based on LeBron James and being on national television with their high school game. That stuff is going on. The question is, how do you, in a more equitable fashion, move some of that money to the athlete side? And the reason you have this resistance is not for academic reasons or for the purity of the sport, which is what it gets veiled in. Yeah. It's because the people who are making the money don't want to give up any more of the money. It's like the EA Sports lawsuit that's going on. There have been some developments there. They're saying that EA Sports and the NCAA could be on the hook for, I think it was, $150 million.
Yeah.
Because they are taking the numbers and the absolute images of these athletes and putting them under the helmets or on the heads of the video game basketball players and all of their attributes, height, weight, hometown, everything, and putting it up there and saying, oh, that's not them, or we own those rights, or that's school property. Yeah, right. That's baloney. And what drives that title? Don't tell me it's the NCAA brand that drives that title. It's the athletes, the individual athletes and basketball programs that drive that sale for EA Sports and that licensing fee for the NCAA. That is exploitation at least, if not something worse.
Deets not speaking.
No,
all the love
he's watching the chat board.
No. I actually was on a different window. I was looking at the Reggie Bush thing. If Reggie Bush pays that guy Lloyd Lake, or whatever his name is, $375,000.
You never hear about this.
Do we ever hear about it again?
Oh, is this the guy who ratted him out?
Yeah, that's what I was looking at.
Yeah.
I was looking at his name. I think it's Lloyd Lake. Do we ever know about it?
No.
No.
No, it's the same thing with the Clear, the steroid controversy that ended up ensnaring finally Marion Jones and other athletes and Barry Bonds and so on. Game of Shadows, great book. You should read it.
Barry
Bonds, oh, dude, he's so guilty.
I mean, it's not even a question, right?
No, I mean, the man's head grew like a hat size and a half or something when he's 30. Like, that doesn't happen.
That's
your
not
shoes
natural.
Don't get big. It just, oh, my God. Anyway, the only reason anyone ever found out about the Clear was that there was a big argument in the track and field world. I think it was, I want to say, Trevor Graham and Bob Kurt, not Bob Kersey, somebody else. But there was this argument, right? And one of them got mad enough to send a sample to USADA, United States Anti-Doping Agency, and say, this is what's happening. Had that never occurred, people would still be using that stuff.
Wow.
Because USADA had no idea that it was out there or how to detect it. No clue. And that just proves the science is ahead of the testing. But it takes something like that, a disagreement with an agent or a guy who was promised something to rat out the situation. And you know that that's going on, and you're not hearing about it because people are getting paid money or people are settling it before the sample gets sent to USADA.
What's amazing is when you hear guys who treat their bodies like temples in terms of they know what's going in, they know what's going out, it's the way they perform. The elite of the elite athletes, the Barry Bonds type and the A-Rods, when they come out and say, I didn't know what I mean, like, you just don't.
Barry.
You're not Barry Bonds. You're that good. He's so good. I mean, Barry Bonds was incredible. But to not know what your trainer's giving you, I mean, you know.
It's
amazing. You're not letting anybody touch you or give you anything unless you know what it is.
And this just affected volleyball, too. Wasn't there a Brazilian player that got suspended from FIVB? And I thought I read that it reinstated now.
You know, Pedro, Furby wrote about it in the New Dig. Casey came back and talked about it. They're really close with Pedro. He never has touched any. I mean, he says,
He said it was
never
a supplement.
Yeah.
And I think that's why he's
got a 2-year ban.
But he's reinstated. I believe I read he's reinstated.
Yeah, you know, Furby wrote about it. So he wrote about it a month ago. And he said, you know, I'm not being naive. I know all athletes say no, but if I had to bet everything on it, I believe Pedro. I mean, what did he have to lose? He's already a top 2 player. They test us all the time. There's no edge he's going to get.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, Pedro has been in basically trying to clear his name, and I think maybe
I'll have to look.
I'll
try to look it up and see if.
I mean, this is a guy that could lose 2 years of his career at 26 years old when he's playing. He's one of the top 3 guy in the world.
Well, the issue now has become everything is so strict that even if you have a minor amount of stuff inside of a cold medication that you took or an antidepressant or vitamins or a protein supplement, any of that stuff, that you are responsible for what went in your body. Now, there have been some decent adjudications of situations where guys have taken stuff and it's been not their fault. Riley Salmon, a perfect example of that, received, I think it was 4 months because he had a change in medication for another ailment he was dealing with. He took some samples that he believed to be free of banned substances, but in fact, there's some banned substance in there. But it comes down to the amount, too. I mean, if you're over the testosterone number by 90%, people know what you're doing.
Something going on.
Yeah, but there has to be some sort of sensible enforcement. But for that, you have to have these organizations that can actually test to a level to make a sensible judgment. Otherwise, it devolves into this black and white stuff that we see in sport and outside of sport when you have children bringing ibuprofen to school and they're, you know, in fifth grade and they get suspended for bringing drugs to school. Really? That's dumb. There's a line at which stuff becomes stupid and you're just being inane about this black and white policy, and I think the same is true for sport.
Oh, you just closing the window there, everybody?
I'm trying to cool it off here in the studio, but I got the kids next door playing, so.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You just made a quick movement, kind of rattled me and Jeremy real quick, like mid-sentence.
You hadn't seen a move like that before.
Well, you know, we're talking indoor. I'm getting a little fired up. We were talking.
Boy,
beach,
were you excited last week in the indoor talk. I mean, you and Sunday were saying names that...
Here's Pedro been reinstated on the chat board. Yeah, we were talking about people that you have no clue who they are.
I mean, but I could just see you, even though I was sleeping at my house while I was listening, I could just picture you so giddy in here, like propped up on his chair. God, I wish we had streaming. Just
so, again, for the listeners at home, you're asleep. Jess is snoring. Millie is asleep next to you.
I take back the Jess's snoring line. That's going to get to her.
Hold on. Millie is asleep next to you. Luca's still rolling around with some matches in a plastic bag, maybe chewing on electric
cord. The reason why Luca's rolling around is she's having nightmares. She was hearing what you guys were talking about and having nightmares.
And you're dreaming of me. You're seeing me in your dreams while asleep. I like the way this is going.
Awkward.
Well, hey, it's been a fun first segment. I'm not even sure what we talked about, but I'm sure we got off on some crazy.
Why is it sometimes when people write stuff on the message board, it looks like it's Chinese or
what? I thought
you
had a
new
computer. It looks fine to me and everybody else.
Okay, well, then forget it. I'll never read what the guy says. He messaged me, and I could care less then.
You know, some guy here wants to get you to the AVCA convention, and we'd love to have you for the Net Live from the AVCA convention, but then he wants you to do the coach's luncheon. And you know,
isn't that
I'm
your luncheon?
Okay, yeah. So back off, Peter, so you're out.
I do not want the coach's luncheon job at all, I swear.
I just want to put out there that I want to do Seaside next year. If I can get a call, please.
I will not be taking any of Barney's jobs, but I will go if they want the Net Live.
Can we have some co-opetition?
Is Louisville having us?
Louisville, they're having us. November 2, I told
that
you.
That could
put
be
on
the first
calendar.
Real travel show.
The Net Live on location, Louisville.
Ann?
We got to learn how to say it. Ann Cordes bringing us in.
Our favorite?
I don't know. Are we staying at her house? I don't know what we're doing.
Wow.
Could be a bad situation. Or good situations. You know.
I don't want you guys always blame my computer for everything, too. It's a problem.
We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we're going to talk to head coach Alan Knipe, interview from this morning, about 20 minutes with him. Good stuff from him. I think you can hear about his thoughts on World League and his thoughts on the upcoming Norsecas and Olympic qualification. You know, they just went to London, and they did a similar test event to what we'll talk about on the beach side.
During the riots, too, correct?
No, they've been back for a little while.
Okay.
Yeah. They preceded the riots. The Net Live here on TheVolleyballNetwork.com. Thanks for joining us. Much more to come. College Volleyball Weekly, the very first one and the very first opportunity to get the AVCA poll. So hang in there. Right back.
Ready for the women's season? Then make sure you get your tickets for the 2011 Rocco Atlet's AVCA College Volleyball Showcase on August 26th and 27th. located at Penn State University's Rec Hall, USC, Oregon, Minnesota, and the four-time defending champion Nittany Lions will battle it out for early season bragging rights. All tickets are under $10, with group ticket pricing available, and can be purchased at the Penn State box office by calling 814-865-5555. Once again, that's 814-865-5555. Get yours today.
Welcome back in the Net Live here on the volleyballnetwork.com. DJ Roche's playlists are available on our Facebook page, posted shortly after each show, facebook.com/thenetlive. If you want to email us during the week, too, with any of your thoughts, thenetlive@gmail.com. And, of course, you can call us 347-677-1525 when we're just here kind of shooting it about different topics. We'd love to hear what you have to say about the sport and about what we are discussing here. Good action on the chat board. Thanks, everybody, for being in there. DJ Roche, who's this?
That was Santee Gold.
Santee Gold.
Yep.
Kind of like that. It's a good song.
She's coming out with a new album soon.
Much like you.
Yes, today, actually. Dropped free promotional use online, djroche.com.
I like it. Way to get in that plug. Excellent work. Well, hey, this morning I had an opportunity to talk with head coach Alan Knipe. They're in practice right now, but he took about 20 minutes to sit down and chat about what has been and what will be for the national team.
Go get me a banana during this time.
This is the part where you go downstairs and just kind of hang out, right? When we're talking beach, that's what I do. Do you want to go down and get a smoothie?
No, I'd like to listen to the interview, but I'd like you to go make me a smoothie.
Okay.
Dollop a peanut butter and a banana.
So this is Alan Knipe. He's in his third year of this four-year cycle, just through World League, getting ready for Norseca's from this morning. DJ Roche. Hey, Coach Alan Knipe, thanks for joining us here on the Net Live. It's always a pleasure to get a chance to talk to you and hear about what's really happening with the U.S. team rather than just the conjecture that we can throw out here on the program. I want to take you back a little bit first before we talk about what's going on right now and get your reactions to World League and the effort that your team put out there.
Yeah, I thought World League was you know, it was really productive for us. We made quite a few changes in some of the things we were trying to accomplish offensively, and just the way we ran our offense and some of the way we ran some of our specific sets, and particularly probably our BIC and the tempo of our offense. So when you get the guys coming back from Europe and you have only a couple of weeks before World League starts, it's not maybe the best time to tinker with things like that. But we just felt after World Championships, there were some things we definitely wanted to change. We felt like we had the athletes and the talent level to get some of these things done. And we knew that going through World League, we'd be trying to still implement some of this change at the same time as trying to compete in the tournament. So there were some ups and downs, but there were a lot of ups, and there were a lot of positive things that we think came from World League.
Yeah, talk to me about that blend that between World League being a training tournament or an all-out effort to win. And I know through the 4 years that equation or that balance kind of changes. What was it this year for you guys? Where was the focus, training or winning?
Well, you know, I don't think it was probably as clear and black and white as that. I think that it was, there's no doubt we were trying to win every match we played, but we wanted to do it under some of the parameters that we set up for ourselves on committing to keeping some tempo to our offense and having a lot more Area 6 BIC presence and running it the way implement the changes we made, excuse me, prior to World League of trying to be a little more dynamic with our BIC and having it floating with our setter so that we can attack more seams in the block. So, you know, there was a learning curve to that. But I would go back and I would say that, it probably training was the most important part of it. But we never lost a competition. That doesn't change in competition. You know, it was much more important for us to get in what we needed to get in. But that didn't change any of the matches while we were playing them of how we were going after the matches as far as trying to get a W.
You mentioned there were several positives coming out of that tournament. What were the positives as far as individual personnel went?
You know, overall, I think the main positive was probably the fact that we got to put a group of players out there consistently for the first time in any tournament we've played since I've been coaching the team. We were able to, I think we started most of the matches with the same team, and you know, that was just really good for our program to start getting closer to some roles being established. And but individually, I thought there was a lot of ones. I thought David Lee had a really good World League, hit for a nice number, blocked a lot of balls, and just put together another solid tournament as he continues to do. I also think that Matt Anderson had a very good tournament for us. You know, early in his career, 09 season, he busted out, played a lot of matches early in the pool, and was starting, and everything was going real well for Matt, and got pneumonia, kind of ended his summer early, and had a little bit of an up and down 2010 for a lot of reasons, a lot of other guys back in the gym, and Matt trying to get back to being 100%. So for him, I think there was a lot that he wanted to prove to himself, but he also needed to prove to his teammates, and I think he did that in fine fashion with some of the matches that he had and put up some real big numbers. I think that the other one, the one probably most people talked about is Brian Thornton, setting a lot of matches for us, came in a little bit the second night of our second – I'm sorry, the second night of the first weekend against Poland, and then started the second night of the second weekend against Puerto Rico, and then started the rest of the matches from there out. And I thought he for a guy kind of being thrown into the fire, even though he's been in our gym and he's set a lot of balls in training, his first real opportunity to set the top team, I thought he handled things extremely well, even though there's a lot that we think he can improve on, and I know he knows that. But for the limited amount of reps he had at this level to jump into World League and play Brazil four times in pool play and again in the finals, I think he did a real nice job. And then, you know, we're leaving out some key guys there, you know, that had good World Leagues. You know, Rich and Reed. Reed played the whole tournament for us, which was great. We hadn't been able to do that last year coming back and having a lot of things going on. He was in and out with us during World League and had some injuries at World Championship. So it was nice to see Reed out there playing every night and getting comfortable with the guys. So
you did take him away from this program. That was sort of a problem for us.
Yeah, you know what? That's okay. You guys have it's a little easier for you guys to go outside and find someone who might be able to come in and pinch hit for Reed than it is for me to find someone to do that here.
That's a fine point. So,
but he, it was real good for him. It was real good for our team just to continue to build some continuity and some trust with each other, because as we continue to blend these guys that haven't played a lot of reps together, it's important that we get quality competition in and we go through some of the highs and lows and continue to get better, you know, every day, whether it be in a match, whether it be while we're serving and passing on the road, or whether it be in a training block here at the ASC. You know, I thought Clay in World League did a great job as the tournament went on, as the big fella seems to do. He continues to get better and better as the matches go on and as the tournament goes on, as he got more and more comfortable with the setting and with the offense we were trying to run. I ended up being the best server in World League again, so not surprising.
Yeah, you mentioned Brian Thornton. He's probably the most surprising thing to people that have been watching the team for the last few years, and you don't really necessarily want to be training a setter 1 year out from the Olympic Games, but it seems like you like a lot of the things about him. We talked about those in the broadcast, his leadership abilities, his intangibles, a lot of the stuff that he brings to the court in competition. What I'm curious about is how do you manage his rise along with Kevin Hansen and Donald Sujo, who have been in the gym for a long time and probably have an expectation that they ought to be on the floor?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, it's an interesting dynamic, what's going on. When the summer started, if you were to say that we would have put it up on number one on our depth chart, that Brian would be that guy, I just wouldn't agree to it. It probably wasn't going to happen. And that's not a slam on Brian. It's just the reality of all the reps the other guys have had and their experience in the gyms and the opportunities they've been given on this team, even with us as a staff. But with Donnie coming back from an injury and not being 100%, and with Kevin having some untimely issues with an emergency appendectomy and the birth of his daughter, there was an opportunity. And, you know, you've heard the story a million times over. Opportunities present themselves, and guys step up and take advantage of those. And that's really what happened for Brian. So we make no apologies for the fact that we try to put the best players we possibly can on the floor. And at the time, we really believe that Brian gave us the best opportunity to be successful while we were trying to make these changes offensively that are very comfortable for Brian. He's running the tempo offense we want to run and setting the quick pick combinations that we want to set are very, very comfortable. This is something he's been doing his whole setting career.
Right.
So it's almost interesting to say that the change was easier probably for Brian, who has played less for us than it was for guys that have played for this team for many years. So I thought it was good. Now, let's not discredit the quality of players that Kevin and Donnie are and the competitors they are. And they won't take this lightly, and they haven't taken it lightly. And it's made them better in our gym, and it's going to make our gym better. So I think that as it goes along, Brian has proven that he can play at this level and he can win and he can help us. And Kevin and Donnie move forward. I know for a fact we're going to hear from Kevin and Donnie, and especially, you know, Kevin's in our gym right now training every day, and he's last week was voted by our players as the player of the week. So he's fighting the way you would want a champion like Kevin is to fight.
You listen to Net Live. We're talking to U.S. Men's National Team Head Coach Alan Knipe. Alan, transitioning from World League, immediately following the league, you took a short break and then went on to the London Test event. Tell us about the Olympic protocol, the accommodations, the food, the people. Kind of give us the 411 on 1 year out from the London Olympics.
Yeah, you know, for us, the venue we'll be playing is a really, really old venue. It's there from the late 30s. They built the venue, and it's got quite a bit of work to do to get it up to the standard for the games. But I think it's size-wise and location, I think there's a lot of positives about where the event's going to be played. I think the people were incredibly supportive and helpful and want to do this thing the right way and are excited about the games coming. And the rumor when we were there was ticket sales are going very, very well for both beach and indoor volleyball. And so that's exciting that the crowds are going to be there to support all the teams, which isn't surprising for volleyball. You know, overall, the tournament was was just six teams, and most of the teams there brought a mixture of players to take a look at some and maybe give some guys a rest back at home, but more importantly, just to get a visual of the venue and get used to the transportation. Where we stayed was in a hotel, so we don't really have an idea of what the Olympic Village accommodations are going to feel like, even though we did get over and try to take a look of what they look like. But overall, you know, it looks good. The only issue in a big city like London, with congestion as it is, and things are going to move a little slow. And
yeah,
that's going to take some time to get from the village to competition. And but you know, obviously USOC will do a nice job of finding a training facility, so we don't have to go all over London to find places. But yeah, it's going to be transportation, I think, is going to be an issue. They are talking about changing some of their bus lanes and carpool type lanes to Olympic lanes only for Olympic vehicles and buses, and obviously that would help greatly. But you know, there is a great buzz, there is a great excitement in the city, and it's starting to build. We were actually there just shy of a year out from opening ceremonies. They had the countdown clock going, and lots of the places are selling memorabilia about the games already. So there's a buzz about it. Everywhere you go, the people are excited that the games are coming. So, but the tournament itself for us, you know, we took some of the guys from our World League roster that were on the roster a lot and maybe didn't see a lot of playing time, and then some guys that weren't on the roster for World League, and try to get them as some opportunities to play. And I thought it was great. We watched a ton of video when we were over there after each match on ourselves, and I thought it was really good for the guys that haven't had much opportunities this year to get on the floor, to get those experiences, and then to get some really good extended video sessions with the staff after. Yeah, I thought it was just really good that we got some extended time to really watch a lot of video game competition video with some of these guys that haven't had that opportunity. And I think it's really set a nice tone for their training block here prior to Norseca. It's some of the things that they see that they need to improve on and some areas of concern. And you know, I think it just gives everyone a little bit more accountability for what they're trying to work at in the gym every day.
Yeah, and you mentioned that training block that you've been in now preparing for Norseca. This is the zone championship that you have to World Cup, which will be at the end of this year and will be your first opportunity to qualify for the Olympic Games. Who's been the first, or who's been the player or players that have really stepped up their game during this training block?
Well, you know, it's went real well. It's been a nice block so far. You know, we started our player of the week this training block, and so far Reed was our player of the week one, and Kevin Hansen was our player of the week two. And that's actually voted on by the players themselves. And, you know, and I think I wouldn't disagree. I think there's some guys that were definitely in the running for both those weeks. But Kevin and Reed have done a nice job. We've had a few guys dealing with just a few limitations that haven't gotten all the reps so far. But also Evan Paddock's been real nice, had a real nice training block so far. So I like it. There's a lot of good things happening. More importantly, we've made a huge effort to clean up our transition. You know, we feel like some of the changes we made for World League, we were focused on so much about being a first ball side out team and of our tempo and our big and our quick, and we've spent so much time on that, and we were always stressing our serve and pass, which I think we did a nice job in that area as well. The biggest area for us in this block, without losing any steam in the areas we already identified for World League, was to improve our transition. And the theme has been, we must pass the dig. We must be able to get, and we're not talking about the ball that we get blown up on down the line with no block in front of it. We're talking about good, controlled, long digs into the angles and off the top of the blocks and taking care of the out-of-system play to a much higher standard, that we can keep our BIC and our quick involved in our offense and stress our opponent's block at a much higher level, you know, much more like a first ball side out offense. And I think the guys have committed to that. And when you actually try to make that change and you're trying to get more balls up defensively and working on your cover and working on not letting tips fall and it's toll because it's a physical grind and investment to get a little better in those areas and take the thought out of should I go for that ball and yes I should go for that ball and then how many reps do you need to make sure the quality is at a higher level, and it's a huge investment. So the guys are not taking the block lightly. They've been bringing it every day, and when you're working on a skill like that, you're trying to get better in these areas. You're fatigued and you're sore, and you got some hip flexors and some backs and some quads and some aches and pains
that go
along with the commitment that it takes to be better in transition and general team ball control. And but I like what they're doing, and I love the attention to detail that's happening in the gym right now when it comes to this is an area that we know we can get better at and we will get better at.
People out there always think that the jumping is going to be the hard part, but definitely an entire defensive practice is worse on my body than just a whole offensive practice for my purposes. Hey,
yeah, there's no doubt that the grind and the burn and the quads and just like we said earlier, the hip flexors in the back, and you're sore when you're firing all those little muscles that you don't maybe consistently use like the other muscle groups. And we kind of went through a nice sore period at the end of week one that carried into the beginning of week two. But as the week concluded last week, the second week of this training block, you can see the guys feeling physically a little bit better.
Looking forward towards Norseca's, this event coming up here at the end of August. Typically in the zone, the North Central Caribbean zone that the United States plays in, it has been the U.S. and Cuba fighting it out. Canada has occasionally been in there. What do you know about the Cuban team situation leading into this event in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, you know, I know very little. You know, I know the team that we played in the World League Finals was missing a couple of guys from their teams that we had seen in previous competitions. Obviously, due to the fact that you're not going to hear a lot about what's going on in Cuba, period, never mind within their volleyball program. We just don't know. So, you know, you hear rumors, but I'm not one to buy into a whole lot of rumors. It's, you know, on what people are blogging about or stuff. I just don't know that to be fact. What I know is that they're a really talented team. They were good even without a couple of their top guys, but if they were to get some of those guys back, they're even better. And we got to expect the Cuban team that's coming to Norseca to be a more than formidable foe that we have to be prepared for. And we probably have to prepare, as we have been, for them having the team we know they're capable of putting on the floor, whether that happens or not.
One last question. We really appreciate the time. We know you have practice. During this season, you know there are changes that you're going to have to make for next year. What are some of those things you already know that you need to work on for next season?
Yeah, I think they're happening right now. You know, our point scoring is the area we would like to get better at, and we know that that's flat out as discipline, that's hard work, and that's execution over a long period of time. So that doesn't happen because you talk about it in a video session or talks about it in a training session. It happens with hard work, and these guys have been putting that in, so I know that will get better. The other thing is for us, as we continue to put more and more pressure on teams with our serve and not only rely on clay serve. And I thought that during World League we had some matches where Reed really took a lot of pressure off clay with his serving, and Matt Anderson also did that, and that was something we thought needed to improve, and we continue to believe so. So I think those two areas are going in the right direction.
Very good. Alan, thanks for the time. Good luck in this training block, and look forward to seeing the United States in World Cup and in the Olympics next year.
Awesome, Kevin. Great talking to you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Have a good practice.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Back live here in the NetLive studio.
Wow. Good start. Wow. Haven't been talking for a while.
That was awesome.
So, Alan Knight.
Very good job, first of all, Kevin.
Thank you.
Great interview. Sounds like Alan came back from that test event feeling like they got out of it what they needed in terms of this team playing together, this team guys getting valuable minutes, whether it's Matt Anderson, Reed, you know, Thornton, those kind of guys. It sounds like as a coach, he was pretty satisfied with that.
Yeah, I think that there's always a blend, right? You're like I stated to him, you're trying to train, you're trying to get ready, but you're trying to win. And one of the biggest things he's had this year is he mentioned the consistent group. Yeah. There have been so many people who are not there for family reasons or injury reasons or just didn't want to play, want to take a rest, this is the first time that that group has really been on the floor the entire time. Even last season when people were in the gym, they got 1.5 sets with that group before Reed went down with a problem, Donald went down with a problem, and it was just kind of cascaded from there.
And remember, when you're with a coach and you're running a system, it takes time for you guys to be able to implement that system, practice it, then get game time with it, and then actually see it work later down the road. You know, Alan hasn't had a lot of time with this team. He talked a lot about the BIC and what they've been trying to do with that and finally seeing that come to fruition. So I think it sounded like that they're on a pretty good path. Did you talk to Reed at all?
I've not spoken to Reed.
Gotcha.
No. In thinking about Brian Thornton in the setting position, this has been the biggest question for this team. With Loy Ball leaving after 08 and not coming back, this has been the biggest question. What are they going to do? How are they going to get consistent play out of that spot? And it doesn't even have to be the highest level of play, right? It doesn't have to be Loy Ball. It just has to be consistent. They have to know when they put a guy on the floor, what level is he going to set at so they can make the adjustments accordingly, right? Put out the right personnel to deal with the setting or structure the offense to deal with the setter's abilities, those kinds of things. And they haven't had that. Brian Thornton reminds me a bit of kind of the Kurt Warner story, and not to say that he's going to be Olympic MVP and lead him to a gold medal, but the opportunity to take advantage of a situation, right? Because Trent Green going into that season in 1999 with the Rams
is the man.
He is the man. He's having a great preseason. They're looking gnarly. He goes down with a knee injury. Warner steps in, and Warner is all world. Trent Green never sees the field again in any meaningful way for the Rams. And Thornton could be that story in that he's entered the floor in the same way due to injuries, due to circumstances. So we'll see if he can hold on to that spot. Because in talking with Alan Knight this summer, he felt like that position was solved. When you spoke to him, he said, if you could snap your fingers and solve one issue on this team right now, because there are several, outside hitters, opposite play, setting, what would you want to solve? He said he wanted to know what he would get out of Clay. That told me that on the setting side, he thinks it's settled.
Our boy Josh on the message board said, no Loy, no medal, which I thought was which I think is an interesting thing, because if you think back to Loy's career, there was a time where people would say, as long as Loy's setting, we might not win a medal.
Absolutely.
He did it on his fourth opportunity.
Absolutely.
And the bottom line is Loy is one of the greats of all time in our country and has a gold medal to prove that. But you got to move on without him. And I think Brian doesn't need to be Loy Ball. I think you hit that on the head. It seems the guys that I talk to involved with this team, you know, if he has the intangibles that you can't coach or teach, you know, slower leadership, his ability not to panic under pressure, to put up a good ball when it's out of system. Because guys at this level, Barney, and correct me if I'm wrong, the setters at this level, with passing's good, they're all good, right? I mean, they can all run an offense.
No, I don't think it's a given.
Okay.
I don't think it's a given because everything's happening so quickly. And especially when you say running an offense, to have the knowledge of the matchups, the feel for the match, and everything that's going on, I don't think it's a given at all. I think you see a wide variety of setter play, even when the ball is passed perfectly.
Obviously, I think guys are going to be at a different level, but I think what I'm trying to say is he's going to be able to put up a pretty good ball when the pass is good. But I think when they're digging balls, can he be that guy like Loy was that's going to put up a great set from anywhere on the court?
Well, and that's transition. That's been, you heard Alan and I talk about it, and that has been the biggest indictment of this team this year. They cannot point score. Or they have not shown that they can point score yet.
No.
They can dig balls, they can hang with teams, but their transition hitting has been poor. And a lot of that is the setting. But it's also having a young outside hitter.
No.
Having Clay, who's kind of been up and down. And I've said Clay is my man. As soon as he goes to a World Championships, Grand Champions Cup, Olympic Games, and doesn't perform, then I'll say, let's look at somebody else from the opposite. But he can suck all year as much as he wants because he shows up at game time. And he's done it year after year after year. He's my guy at that spot.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, you lose a guy like Loy Ball or he retires, it's always going to be a big loss. That the guy who fills in after him, you got tough shoes to fill.
But, I'll tell you,
you know, you can't give up on it yet.
I'll tell you, getting beyond Allen in 2012, what's going to be interesting is 2016,
because
this team is gone.
Yeah, I mean,
there are a couple of people I know who feel like they're going to make it through 16. I would be shocked.
Is like a Dave Lee done, too?
Maybe he might make it. Uh-huh. Dave Lee is rock solid,
but,
man.
But, I mean,
but it's
Millar,
attention, too, right?
Stanley, Reed, Lamborn, all these guys that have been around for a long time?
Gone, I think. And some of them may tell you they're going to hang on, and I hope they do. I mean, I hope these guys play as long as possible. They're great players. But that's I just don't see how you're going to have a team full of, at that point, 36, 37, 38-year-olds.
Yeah.
No way. There has to be somebody better coming along behind as well. So, hey, DJ Roche, let's take about 15, 20 seconds here on the other side. We're going to have Vinny Lopes from Off the Block. It's a volleyball blog that you guys can check out there. And I also want to talk to him about what's been going on with the junior boys. Some interesting stuff. And, again, talking about that next generation of players. These are these kids who will be going through college in the next 4 years. Will some of them make an impact in 2014, before the 16 games? Some of those guys are going to be on that list. Are we taking it back yet? Is this 93?
Not until we talk about it. This is well before 93.
Okay, because we still have a 1993 issue coming up. I know Geeter was paging through this thing. It is an epic bit of volleyball. This is what people still wish the beach was, right? This issue right here, September of 93.
Not the wardrobe, but the money, the tournament, the prestige.
This is what they
personalities.
Think.
Personalities.
Is still now. This is what we all wish was still now. But we're gonna go on the way back train. The Net Live, right back. Glad I didn't hazard a guess at that. I'd be getting razzed for weeks on the chat board and via email for that one.
It's just Stevie Wonder. People were really bummed that you didn't know who Stevie Wonder was, Kevin.
I know who Stevie Wonder is.
And it's not like it was an obscure song that you don't know. I mean, you should know that song.
Oh, man. It's like the Rolling Stones. Like, you could find some obscure song I don't know the Rolling Stones do, but, oh, you don't know the Rolling Stones.
That would be fine. But this was not an obscure Stevie Wonder song.
Okay.
I'm not going to let this go anytime soon.
Well, hey, we want to bring on a listener, a guy who's involved in the world of volleyball. His blog is called Off the Block, Vinny Lopes. And I hope this is him, because we don't have to read pretty.
Yes. Oh, how's it going, guys?
Good, Vinny. Thanks so much for calling in, spending a little time. We've been communicating with you a little bit about kind of the junior team, the junior worlds were going on, and the U.S. did extremely well. And as we were saying, maybe some of these guys will be making an appearance on the national team in 6 years' time.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, the junior team played absolutely fantastic at the World Championship. It's a U21 tournament happened last week down in Brazil.
Oh, Vinny, we're losing you a little bit here.
Oh, sorry.
Hang on
1 second. There. Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, there we go. Okay, so it happened in Brazil.
Okay, sorry about that. So, they were playing down in Brazil and wound up finishing the tournament in fourth place, which best finish for the United States in the 40-year history of the tournament. And, really from day one, U.S. coach John Hawks came in, sending the message that they want to win the gold medal, which, was really an ambitious goal. When you look at this team, they only trained for 1 month compared to the other teams that trained for multiple months or a year. But they came in, they played well, had some big upset wins, and wound up coming away, almost winning the first medal in U.S. history.
Well, yeah, they were involved in a couple of matches that could have given them a medal. They lost a semifinal to whom?
They wound up losing the semifinals to Serbia, and you know, really a tough match for them. The U.S. wound up committing 37 errors, and I think that you could see really with that match, one of the challenges for them was just the fatigue, because you know, it was a really demanding tournament when the team's having to play 8 matches in 10 days, something that not a lot of the U.S. players are used to, kind of at the college level, experience that in their youth. But the real challenging for them, you'd see a little bit of the fatigue set in, but you know, for the most part, a real big success for the USF tournament.
Vinny, it's Geeter. How did a guy like Jeff Menzel play from UC Santa Barbara at that level?
Yeah, you know, for Menzel actually wasn't in the tournament, but you know, he would have played absolutely great. Menzel's actually currently now competing at the World University Games, and he has been absolutely fantastic. The U.S. right now is 2-1, and Menzel has led the United States in kills in all 3 matches, had 23 kills this morning in a loss to the Czech Republic, but he has looked great. And you know, I know that he's looking at possibly going professional. He's definitely boosting his resume, especially when you look at what he was able to do in that postseason, having almost 100 combined postseason kills to get the Gauchos to the national championship match.
Vinny, tell us a little bit about your website. Off the Block is your blog, and give us a little information about the development of it and what people can expect to find there.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, Off the Block is a website that focuses on college men's volleyball. You know, so we focus on that year-round. So, you know, this time of year, you know, it's kind of an exciting time with all the schedules coming out. You know, coaches making some changes on their coaching staff. So, you know, it's really your place to go for the college men's volleyball world, you know, kind of place where I kind of grew up covering that as a reporter, and I've wanted to continue to cover it. And you can view it. It's at offtheblockblog.wordpress.com, or you can also find it on Facebook at Off the Block.
Okay, well, great. I'm looking on here. You have a lot of stories about the NCAA raising the APR mark, aftermath of world championships, notes about coaches and getting into Hall of Fame, Serbia blowing the United States away in 4 games to win that world championship bronze medal, all kinds of great information on that blog. Vinny, we appreciate you calling in and giving us a little bit of an update what's going on, and keep in touch. Check it out there, people, offtheblockblog.wordpress.com. Vinny Lopes, thanks.
No problem. Thank you, guys. Keep up the great work.
Thanks, Vinny. All right, good stuff there from Vinny. Yeah, Geeter, you were looking at the World Uni Games post that's just up now.
I know, people are panicking on the message board about it.
Relax. It's okay
to switch gears from the juniors to the World Games, right?
Hey, we want to talk about it all here. Yeah. You know? We're trying to give people a window into who the upcoming stars are. When you talk about NCAA, you've got some of those guys in there, Murphy Troy, Jeff Menzel, guys that I don't see those guys making an impact necessarily, although I've heard Murphy Troy's name mentioned a couple of times. Evan Paddock's job is to shut the door there. Alan Knight mentioned Evan Paddock. He did have a good run at London where he had a chance to play a lot more. And Evan, of course, struggled last year and then doesn't play a ton behind clay, and it's very difficult to come in and out. But it's going to be interesting. I'm not sure how many of those college guys can really make an impact from 1 year out, because it is such a big raise in game to go to the very next level. Well, guys, we're minutes away from the College Volleyball Weekly, waiting on the poll here from the AVCA. I think we're just about there. Any predictions on who's going to go number one? Geeter, any thoughts?
I mean, Penn State lost people, but when you win 4 titles in a row, I just don't know how you're not going to put them in the top 4. But Texas had an unbelievable recruiting class. They'll be right up there. Nebraska will be up there. I think Washington will be up there as well. Those are some of the teams that jump into mind for me.
What about USC?
Oh, yeah, of course, USC. You know, I'm hearing rumors about USC, about Fallon possibly transferring.
Fallon Fanoimoana?
Yeah, I don't know what that means grades-wise, or I know she was in summer school and stuff like that, but the rumor is Hawaii, so I haven't confirmed that. I just heard it over the weekend from some people. You know, read it a little bit on some message boards, but that would be a monster blow to them. If Fallon and Alex Jupiter are on the left side and Haglund's libero, that team is going to be, you know, as good as they were last year, if not better. They made it to a Final Four with all those guys as freshmen. So, you know, Jupiter is going to be a senior, obviously, but Fanoi and Haglund were all freshmen last year. So that team is definitely a top five team.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great season. I think there's a lot of fantastic athletes left in there. And as we talked about, the national team, Jim, is deeper than it's ever been. So it's it's good to get started. Whoa, I had you muted there, Jeremy.
My computer freaking out. Keep me muted.
All right. I've got one here, I think.
Yeah, I don't know if I have it or not.
Okay, I've got one here, I think. We can throw this on. This is the first one, so under the gun right now.
Who are you going to play?
Well,
I mean, Penn State's won four titles in a row.
This is the alma mater song. Is this not doing it for you?
What song is this?
This is the alma mater song of the number one team, the ABCA. Four. Maybe we need a different one. Maybe we need this one. Association with the ABCA, Net Live, proud to present each week the College Volleyball Weekly, the best of whomever is out there playing in the college volleyball. See, Geeter's freaking out because he doesn't know who it is. This is from Penn State, Geeter.
I understand that, but do we have a top 25 list?
We do. I just got it. I'm going to go through it for you in just a moment. It's fresh off the presses, just closed at 11 a.m. Pacific time. From the ABCA.
I mean, how can it not be Penn State?
It has to be Penn State.
I don't care if they have nobody on their team and they're not even fielding a team. You put them number one in the nation because they've won four national championships in a row.
Well, I know for our correspondent, Mike Sonheimer, who's joining us to break down the early part of the season, he's just happy that USC wasn't number one. He didn't have to listen to that Trojan fight song once again.
I got to be honest. I don't know this song.
These guys got to rap it.
Yeah.
Cool it, people.
I mean, have you heard this song, Jeremy? No.
They don't have. Yeah. Does Penn State have a true, song that you would
usually
like,
you can
go
pick,
to?
You could pick some of them out. I mean, it's not that I've been to a lot of Penn State football games or.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I've seen.
Jay Hossick on the chat board is going to be giving us some serious grief.
Yeah.
For not being able to find a fantastic Penn State fight song.
For dear old State, he's already on there just chatting it up, getting excited.
Tell him to send it over.
So we're joined by our correspondent, Mike Sonheimer. You may know him from the Men's College Volleyball Weekly. He was an excellent correspondent for us this past springtime, and we're happy to have him back here on the women's side. He works at UCLA, where he is involved with compliance and the Associate AD of Academic Admission Services and On-Campus Recruiting, the statistical support for television and Olympic Games. He's going to be one of our correspondents, along with Holly McPeak, who will be joining us in 2 weeks' time. She's just back from a family vacation. We're also working on getting Dave Reed in here, but we are pleased to be joined for the very first College Volleyball Weekly by Mike Sonheimer. Mike, welcome in.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen, to talk to you guys.
Mike, let me give you the top five, just hot off the presses from the ABCA. Big thanks to them for shooting it right over. Penn State, number one, SoCal, two, California, three, Texas, four, Nebraska, five. Six, Stanford, Washington, Illinois, Florida, Hawaii, rounding out the top 10. And then your UCLA Bruins sitting at number 11. Give us your reactions to those rankings.
I think that Penn State, because they've won four in a row and they've got the best coach with Russ Rose, deserves to be number one. I think USC, whether they're number two or not, depends a lot on what Athuah Moana ends up at USC. If she ends up at Hawaii, Hawaii will be a definite contender to be in the Volley Four and have a shot at winning it. Most of those teams, though, what's interesting, you know, Kevin and Kristen, she both have some setting background a little bit, even though, Kevin, you hit so much. The big thing is most of those 10 schools have setting issues. And
really?
I think that's, yeah, or they have competition at that spot. USC is talking about potentially going to a 6-2. Cal's got to replace Lloyd. Texas has some issues, whether Allison, who got hurt last year, is going to come on and be the first-string setter or not. Nebraska's moving to Cook instead of Anderson now, and they're going from a 5-1 instead of a 6-2. Washington's got a transfer setter. You know, so things like that. I think the only team that's ranked overranked in the top 10 is probably Stanford. I think the other nine are all legitimate. I think Stanford is going to have some issues. I think they've got great coaching staff, but I'm not sure they're quite as strong. And then Washington, I think, is a real sleeper because they get Amanda Gill back eligible after transferring from UCLA, so they've got the best middle core in the country. And if their outside hitting can fit on the pins, losing Perry and Carlson, they're going to be right there.
Yeah, the one team I wanted to ask you about was Cal losing Carly Lloyd all the way to the national championship game. I know they got some great recruits going in there, but player of the year. How do you replace her?
Well, they've got the best hitter in Murray. Murray's by far the best hitter. They've got the other spots done. Ellie Barrett was a very nice setter out of high school, and if they can get their setting going, I mean, they're going to be right there because, I mean, they battled everybody right to the wire. Rich Feller did a tremendous job making that team come along, and they're going to be awful tough because, you know, Johnson's very strong in the middle. Hawari came back and played very, very well. They had an outstanding freshman on the outside. So, I mean, they have all the positions there. It's just a matter of the setting gels because Lloyd had an incredible year. They're going to be right there. The nice thing is I think nine teams have a shot at winning it. I think there's really nine teams that are right now right there for the get to San Antonio. If Texas gets there, they're obviously going to have a big home advantage. The Longhorns have the best recruiting crop. They got Eckerman and Bell. They'll probably be in their starting lineup as incoming freshmen. I mean, Geeter's got a special affinity for Mr. Gregory and Mr. Group over at Texas, but I think that they have a great shot.
They also have Eric Sullivan there, an assistant coach, so we'll see what value add he can be.
Definitely. I mean, they're paying him enough. He better be. Geeter, turn that job down.
I don't think, Geeter, did you turn that job down?
What job is that? Sullivan's job?
Yeah.
Of course I turned that down.
Hey, Penn State ends up with 54 first-place votes, Southern Cal with 5, Cal with 1 first-place vote. So Penn State definitely number one. But let's get back to Southern Cal for a second. Are you hearing some of the same rumors about Fallon Caruana, and would she be released to play this season, or is that going to be a one-year hiatus?
I think that Pat Hayden at SC may release her to be able to be eligible right away. I've heard that she may not be back at SC. They still have a lot of talent. And if that's the case and she ends up, the most likely place is Hawaii. Hawaii's got as good pin hitters as around. They find a place for her. It's just a matter for their setting to come along. So Hawaii's got some setting issues, and they will be great. So we'll see if that happens. I mean, that's, like I said before, the biggest difference, the setting's so important in women's, but the other difference between women's and men's is in men's, the teams that win are usually senior-oriented. They've had 15 different champions. In women's, freshmen are so much skilled now in girls' volleyball on the club and high school level, and they get to the college level. I mean, you can get someone like McClendon who comes in and dominates at Penn State in her first year, and you get people like Funamoana who can dominate in their first year. And the Texas freshmen come along, or you know, another one at Penn State gets in the middle, or you know, somebody else at Washington, Van Zandt, they got the number one recruit coming in there. All these teams can, you know, move up and gel depending on what happens. Nebraska, I think, has got a really good, nice returning nucleus. If they can put things together in their offensive system, he's got great pin hitters. So I think there's a lot of these teams that really have a lot going. Illinois was the best team in the country last year in the month of September to injuries hit, and Kevin Hanley's got a great recruiting group. His team's got a shot.
Well, yeah, you're getting back to the freshman impact player. You mentioned McClendon from Penn State, who was a huge part of that Penn State deal, especially at the national championship. And if you had to pick one of the incoming freshmen, who's your impact player?
I think you have to really look at Van Zandt at Washington. Everybody thought that she was just a pure hitter who could do anything. She's 6'2", and for Washington, she's got to be the gun because Carlson and Perry were so solid for the Huskies for 4 years on the outside, and Jim McLaughlin does a really nice job with that program. If she can come in and play, because Washington by far has the best middle, if Sanders can come on at center, they have a shot at, you know, right there. I mean, Cal and SC are very, very strong, and I think that you have to really look at that. Emily Young at SC, if they can run a 6'2", and Mick changes it over. He won national championships for 2 years with running a 6'2 offense. So we'll see what happens if he wants to change it over. As Bateman was an All-American at 5'1 setter, and to have two setters means you got more hitters, and SC is loaded with hitters.
Sonny, is there a team out of the top 10 that you think could be there at the end of the year?
I mean, I like Nebraska a lot. I really think that they've been close last couple of times around, but that John Cook's really got the nucleus now. He's got great size. He's got experience in the middle. Brooke Delano, healthy, makes a big difference. I mean, Worth is just a tremendous outside hitter. And Lauren Cook's got real good experience. I mean, I think now she's had a year in the Nebraska system. She's run the off-season program. I like their team a lot. And like I say, I also think that Cal's a sleeper team because if the setter comes along, Cal's got a better six components than anybody else in the country. Their six, if the setting comes along, can match anybody. And then Russ Rose at Penn State, if he gets his freshman middles, he's got some people to go along with it. I think the big thing at Penn State is Brown was glue for 4 years. She won 4 national championships. Every big match, Brown was fantastic for Penn State. And you have to have a go-to player to win an NCAA title.
In thinking about Stanford this year, the loss of all those great players and the state of their program, is it Stanford or is it another team? What coach is really going to earn their money this year and have to get it done to build a team?
Well, I think if John Dunning gets through this year and he can get all the way to have a shot at it, he's already got a Fab Five coming in for the following year in recruiting. He's got the number one recruiting group. We can talk about recruiting early. He's already loaded. He's got a Fab Five. He's got incredible players coming in for the year after. But I think what you have to really do is you have to look at Texas here. I think that they've been close, so close the last couple of years, and even though they lost a couple of players, Texas is loaded. I mean, Fawcett's a big loss. They lost Engel and Hooker from the year before that. But Texas has got all the components there that this is really the year, with Sullivan being out of the coaching staff, to go with Salima, Davidson. I mean, everything's there for Texas to win. It's in San Antonio. If they get there, they should win it. If not, then Geeter's pregame speech, which I'm sure he'll give before the finals, better work. Am I putting pressure on you, Geeter?
It's all on you, Tony. I have no problem having it on me.
Is there a team out there, Mike, that you think could be the biggest disappointment for this year?
I'm not sure there's anybody early as disappointment. I think we have to kind of like look and see. Injuries always play a factor. I think if there's a sleeper team out there, it may be UCLA, though. I think if there's a team that maybe is maybe underlooked, they're picked fifth in the Pac-10 conference because they have Tabitha Love at 6'6", transferring from Minnesota. I think Minnesota, they'll get Hugh McCutcheon in another year, but I think Minnesota's a team that, they could come along. Tennessee's out there. Louisville with Ann Quarters now being the head coach. Those are all teams. Long Beach State, Brian Jimolero's got the best team he's had probably in this decade. Coming out in the last 10 years. But I think you have to really look at, it's just so wide open. There's so many great players now in women's college volleyball. Like I say, I think there's 9 teams that could win it. I think there's another 10 teams that have a shot at potentially getting to the last group.
Yeah, getting back to my roots, I think Illinois is a team to watch. With all those injuries, getting players back, I think they put together a really nice staff out there. And Kevin Hamley
Definitely. Seems
like a guy who just knows what he's doing.
Yeah, I think, like I said, Illinois was the best team in the country. They were my pick to win it back in September. They went and blew out Texas 3-0. They were playing really, really well. And then Buehler went down with the injury for the season. And they were just not good. They still went well, but they just weren't the same team. And I think starting off, they've got outstanding pin hitters. They have, Ward and Bartz on the corners. And they've got a good unit. And I think they have a shot, too, at pushing Penn State. And then the conference. I mean, Nebraska and Penn State play early. Nebraska's now in the Big Ten conference, and it's going to be pretty amazing.
I got to ask you this, Sandy, and don't be scared of getting fired, but what is the best conference in women's volleyball this year?
I think from top to bottom, you still have to go with the Pac-12. I think that you have to really...
Really?
No question about it. The Pac-12 is loaded. The problem is that adding in Utah and Colorado as decent teams, I mean, because the NCAA limits how many matches you can play non-conference, it's possible that some team in the Pac-12, because they lose a couple of non-conference matches, national teams could be left out because they finish below 500 in the conference, but they're still better than 30 or 40 of the teams that get in. I think they're loaded. The Big Ten is, I think, a very, very strong conference. Again, this year, I think they would be the other conference if you look at the teams up there, because you got your Penn States, you have your Illinois, Nebraska being added in, but then Minnesota is very strong. I think Wisconsin will be improved this year. Michigan State, Michigan are all good teams, and their Northwestern's gotten better, so they're loaded too. I think the SEC was a little bit overrated last year based on postseason. I think they're getting better, but they're not quite at the same level as the first two. Florida, Mary Wise does a tremendous job, and as long as Murphy plays to her potential, Florida's got a shot at winning it.
It seems like Long Beach, you mentioned how good they are this year. They've had the best team. They have the best team they've had in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Do they have scheduling issues? Are they going to have a tough time scheduling enough tough teams and perhaps having success against those teams to really show up come tournament time if they don't have a completely dominating season?
I agree. It's a very great point that you make. I mean, scheduling is so important during the year, but Long Beach State will find out early. They're in the Hawaii tournament where they're going to play both UCLA and Hawaii, and that'll tell a lot early in the season. I think that you need to try to stay sharp during the year, and that's hard when you can roll over teams. But the Big West is a better conference. They'll be improved this year. I think some of the teams are a little bit better over there. But, Long Beach State, I think it's just tougher when you get into postseason. But if they can win early, the nice thing about sweeping through the Big West Conference, they will most likely get an NCAA first and second round at home. And it's real tough to play in the pyramid and beat Long Beach State.
But see, that seems like a struggle if you're that team. If your entire postseason berth, or not entire, but the deciding factor is your very first outing for the year, that seems like a tough way to judge them come the end of the season if they do well in their conference tournament but don't win it. It just seems like an odd thing to have to do and a really difficult situation for them.
I think it's tough on any team. I mean, look at some of the teams that have come out with big rears. I think it was tough on Florida last year. I think Florida got in a tough match last year and got beat in the NCAA tournament by Purdue. And I think part of it is that Florida had such an easy time getting through only a couple of tough matches in the SEC. But I think a lot depends on your leadership. I think a lot depends on the training. And if you got the right team, you can get there still, even not playing the toughest of schedule. I still just believe that if you have good enough players and can really control your side of the net, you have a great chance of advancing in the NCAA when they get to the 64.
Sonny, is there a coach out there maybe on the rise, or a young coach taking over a program, or just someone that we should keep our eye on? They don't necessarily have to be in the top 24. Maybe they are. Just someone that we can keep an eye on.
I think there's a lot of real good young programs. I mean, they've moved around. The Tulsa program that came around, their coach moved on. You look at the person who went over to Louisville. Of course, she's doing really, really well. I think there's a lot of coaches on the rise. I think that we see more teams kind of coming through and seeing what happens. But when you go back and you look, though, at the top 10 or 12, those are all veteran coaches. I think Mike Seeley, being a head coach in his second year at UCLA, is on the rise. I think UCLA, he really did a great job just to get into the NCAAs last year after having players transfer out. And I think that UCLA will be on the rise this year. I think he had a real good recruiting year with a transfer. I think they're a team, if you look at somebody, he is a young coach, being only second year as head coach. People think of him as older because he worked with Dave Soji. I mean, but I think at the same time, you have to look at the teams in the top 10. Those are all veteran coaches. When you look at Penn State, USC, California, Texas, Nebraska, Washington, you're talking Hawaii. These are all veteran teams, veteran coaches. I mean, I think Kevin Hanley's done a great job at Illinois, and I would call him in the younger, up-and-coming kind of coaches.
Mike Sonheimer, thanks so much for joining us. We look forward to arguing with you the entire year about picks and so on, and we look forward to really getting into it. We'll have Holly McPeak and you back in 2 weeks' time here on the show.
As long as we can keep that song off the air for this season, I'll be fine.
Well, hopefully Mike Seeley delivers for you, and UCLA can climb up, and maybe we'll be playing some Bruins.
There's going to be so many great matchups in the first two or three weeks. I think it's just going to be really exciting to look at the matchups each week.
Cool. Thanks very
much. Well, last thing, ESPN's going to have their Wednesday night match of the week, too, so I think it's going to be great for the people out there that are fans of college volleyball. There's more and more that's going to be on TV this year.
Wonderful. Michael Sonheimer, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Mike Sonheimer, I like him. He's just a font of information. Well, we'll run down the top 10 here again before we get out of the AVCA College Volleyball Weekly. Number 1, Penn State. Number 2, USC. Number 3, Cal. 4, Texas. 5, Nebraska. 6, Stanford. 7, Washington. 8, Illinois. 9, Florida. 10, Hawaii. Other mentionables, 11, UCLA. 12, Minnesota, in what will be an interesting transitional year. Purdue, Northern Iowa, Colorado State in the top 15. Pepperdine got 125 points but did not make the top. Cal State Northridge, I don't see him anywhere here with Jeff Stork.
Why are you looking at me?
On the ladies' side of the game. And Long Beach State, who we just talked a lot about, 22. Although, as Mike talked about, early season will be key for them.
Long Beach State hasn't had that run in a while.
They haven't. And there's been a lot of discussion about the difficulty of scheduling.
You know what other team has not been in there in the last couple of years? Arizona. Dave Rubio's Arizona team, who was, for a good run there when they had Glass and Bree Ladd and Jen Abernathy. They were, top 10 team for a few years in a row. Also went to a Final Four.
I am searching for Arizona in here, and I don't see even any votes on two or more ballots for an Arizona. Louisville got 33 points. Oh, there's Arizona, 29, right behind Louisville. So that's the AVCA poll just out. Preseason top 25 teams. All right. Let's take a little break, DJ Roche. When we come back, we're going to go to 1993.
I got a little something for Geet here. I played it before, but this song is from 1993. He'll know what it is.
Karch, bet I will. Kent, Shark Watches, CBVA, huge Hermosa tournament shot. First year ever of Grand Prix. We still have to talk about it for this year, but the first year ever, the results there, the results from the Men for World League. A lot of great names from way back then, and then a fashion show in the back of this mag that is spectacular.
1993. Glorious year.
I was 1 year out. I was here playing on the beach and just nowhere. I was wearing pink and green shorts and trying to get a game at Marine Street. It was a sad state of affairs.
The only bad thing for me is I was still living in the Valley.
Ew.
Yeah.
Will you tell Kevin to unmute me or else I can't play any music?
Hey, you know what?
Hey, Kevin, why don't you unmute Jeremy and start running the show?
Incidentally, 1993, you're running a grass tournament at Northridge? I'm playing in that grass tournament.
I ran that grass tournament.
I'm playing there. I'm sucking Valley smog. playing this tournament.
Jeremy knows. This is
but
one
I'm
my
loving this
songs.
Song.
Just watch Geet during
Arrested
the break.
Development.
Just watch him.
It's just my favorite, dude. I mean,
oh wow, Kevin, you knew.
Always.
Hey, that's right, my wheelhouse. Right back to Net Live.
Here, have a dollar. In fact, no, brother man, here, have two. $2 means a snack for me, but it means a big deal to you. Be strong, serve God only. Know that if you do, beautiful heaven awaits. That's the poem I wrote for the first time. I saw a man with no clothes, no money, no plate, Mr. Winter. That's his name. No one ever knew his name, cause he's a no one. Never thought twice about spending on an old bum until I had the chance to really get to know one. Now that I know him, the giver money isn't charity. He gives me some knowledge, I buy him some shoes. And it takes black spend all that money on big colleges. Still, most of y'all come out confused. Go ahead, Mr. Winter. Go ahead, Mr. Wentz. Mr. Wendell has freedom, a free that you and I think is dumb. Free to be without the worries of a quick to diss society, for Mr. Wendell's a bum. His only worries are sickness and an occasional harassment by the police in their chase. Uncivilized, we call him, but I just saw him eat off the food we waste. Civilization, are we really civilized? Yes or no? Who are we to judge when thousands of innocent men can be brutally enslaved or killed over a racist grudge? Mr. Wendell has tried to warn us about our ways, but we don't hear him talk. Is it his fault when we've gone too far? And we got too far, cause on him we walk. Mr. Wendell, a man, a human in flesh, but not by law. I bid you dignity to stand with pride. Realize that all in all, you stand tall. Go ahead, Mr. Wendell.
Go ahead, Arrested Development.
Geeter's dancing the entire break.
This is something else, man. I was coming off working at the warehouse.
Faintly in the background, please.
I used to work at the warehouse and listen to this stuff all day long.
1993. What a great year. I was finishing up my junior season at Cal State Northridge. We lost to UCLA on May 8th in the NCAA Finals.
I was
Mike
at that
Feely,
match.
Eric Sullivan, Kevin Wong, Jeff Nygaard, Tim Kelly, Dan Landry, Stein Metzger. When I say it like that, it just really hits me that they were better. They were just better.
You
but you know what?
You, didn't have the
you
big
can
German
beat them. We
could
have beat
them.
You?
You didn't have the big
We beat
German?
Them every year. Yeah, we had Axel Hagar. He was on the left.
Ah, the other big
Peter
German.
Peixoto was on Oliver. The left, who got maybe three sets the entire year, but he could pass.
Pistol Pete Peixoto,
yep.
As they used to say.
We
in
had
the
Ken Lynch,
Dome.
My high school teammate and college teammate.
Who
on
could
the right.
Bench press what, 350?
He was an abs. He was Lenny from Of Mice and Men, just a monster. Matt Unger setting. I backed him up. Craig Hewitt, the M2. Coley Kymen at the M1.
Wow. Wow. Good for you. I was playing at Pierce Junior College. Myself, Jason Ring, Dan Nash, who would go on to star
absolutely
at Cal State Northridge.
Crew.
Good group of people. So, 1993 September issue of Volleyball Magazine. This is the 35th anniversary of Volleyball Magazine, and we are happy to go through some of the old mags they have on file. This one is something else, man. 1993 College Women's Preview.
Some of the outfits
there.
Kent Steffes leads
Pro Beach Volleyball into a new age, it says. And meet the boys from Brazil. That's Loyola and Engenho.
Yeah, there's some great pictures of Jacko in there. A young Eduardo Basile with just the angel eyes. Fantastic.
Karch advertising Shark Freestyle watches, yep. Of which I won one and did accept it in a college or a CBVA event. So eat that, college volleyball. NCAA. I got a watch and a beach chair, and you didn't know anything about it. So, bam!
Kent and Karch were in pursuit of winning 13 in a row. They ended up losing. Look at that picture of Judd Bushler.
Judd Bushler talking about moonlighting. This is back before his glory years with the Chicago Bulls.
He had just gotten done with his third year in the NBA. He had just gotten done playing for the Warriors. So it was before he actually ended up getting cut and then invited to the Bulls camp. Stevie Kerr told him about it.
That worked
ended
out
up
okay.
Making the team and getting three rings. But he was playing on the four-man tour.
The four-man tour was cruising. They had events in Cape Cod, in Phoenix, Virginia Beach, Seal Beach for the women also. Gabby Reese headlining that mess. Really good stuff. Killer Loop ads. Oh, yes. Earth, air, water wear for the active beach lifestyle. Loving that. Wes Welch, the 1991 AVP Rookie of the Year.
Hey, there's a trivia question for you. The 1991 AVP Rookie of the Year was...
Wes Welch, apparently.
Amazing.
He's got hair that looks somewhat similar to a pro wrestler.
Yeah, there's a picture of Welch in the back, and that when it gets to that section, pretty much the fashion section, and he's got an unbelievable mullet working, just a sweet mullet.
I just want to go, woo!
Yeah.
Just Ric Flair hairdo all over the place. Liz Mazakian and Carolyn Kirby, we're celebrating. It's talking about Women's Pro Beach getting its first taste of national television. The WPVA was the dominant thing. Look at $20,000 Coors Light Santa Cruz Open. And we talked a little bit about this in the player cards last week. The women were making $30,000 while the men were making $300,000.
There's a list of the top who are the top money leaders for both men's and women's somewhere in there.
Oh, it's Arch in the back, I think. The top. Yeah. There's a picture of your boy, Coley Kiman, talking about the Nationals.
Yeah, Paul Mitchell won the title over Creo that year in Memphis.
Some interesting.
We backed it up
the
next year, my friend, with a title. Tom Hoff was on that team.
There's a pullout poster of Scott Fortune and Mizuno, which is pretty cool. And then there's this shot, an overhead, a helicopter shot of Hermosa Beach for this tournament, which is beach seating, packed, surrounded by four small grandstands and one like 3X grandstand. There must be, 25,000 people there? Conservative, yeah. Inside center court alone? Forget the outer courts? An unbelievable scene there in Hermosa Beach.
How do people see pics from this magazine that we're talking about? Is there a way to go on the website?
We might have to get some up there. I don't know where you come across some of this stuff. That's a fine question.
I can take some with my phone and I'll post it on the Facebook page.
This is the Miller Lite U.S. Championships, August 27th and 29th, live on NBC, mind you, the 28th and 29th in Hermosa Beach, California. Prize money, $250,000, listing the 1992 champs, who were Karai and Steffes. There's all kinds of great stuff in here. Now, Grand Prix had just begun. It was the very first year of Grand Prix, and the women, it said, did not do so well. They had they lost their first three matches and never recovered. They ended up finishing, I think, seventh place here in the $1 million Grand Prix, and, of course, the women right now playing in that event. Their trip back home from Grand Prix, 42 hours and 28 minutes, as timed by Terry Laskevich, then national team head coach. Listen to the starting lineup here. Setter Lori Endicott. Middle blockers Elena Oden and Tammy Lilly. Outside hitters Karen Kemner and Tara Crossbattle, who would play for a much longer time. And opposite Janet Cobbs. How about that? T. Williams was injured. She was out rehabilitating a shoulder injury. And Keba Phipps had just decided not to return to the team, although she would eventually return and play a good role on that squad. The World League for the men had just happened, the midway through World League, according to this report. They were not doing anything that resembled the bronze medal performance in 92 Olympics. After 10 matches, they were fifth in a pool of six with a 3-7 record. Unbelievable. Russia was 10-0, Brazil 8-2, Japan 4-6. But the U.S. men struggling quite a bit. Not a lot of experience. Javier Gaspar on the team, setting. Opposite Bob Samuelson and Brian Ivey. Eric Sato. But Samuelson out, Briseño out. So interesting group of names there, too. And then talking about moving the national team. Then Executive Director John Carroll was talking about moving the national team. They were talking about moving them to Orlando, Florida, San Antonio, Texas, New Orleans, or San Diego. And we went to Colorado Springs.
So I had texted Louis a picture of him in the back in that fashion part.
You mean with all the hair?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. And he just wrote back to me, that was the Mugatu campaign. And I just laughed out loud.
Mugatu?
You don't know that movie?
No. What movie is that?
Jeremy, I can't help him anymore.
Great.
Zoolander.
Great. Yeah, I have not seen all of Zoolander. It's one of the critical films I have not seen all of. We're going to get to that fashion section in just a second, but I wanted to stop by the preview. This is the Women's College preview, since we just did our own preview. Powers at the time, they were making predictions for the West, Stanford, UCLA, Southern Cal, Brigham Young, and Arizona State in the West region.
Interesting.
Not that different than today.
Arizona State.
Had some good pictures in here. Katie Jamison from Texas. Charlene Johnson. And at this point, it's Dash Fiaputa. And I think Charlene now remarried a few times and just changed her last name again. I'm not recalling it, but Charlene now coaching. She was starring at Brigham Young at the time. There's a shot here of Kenyatta Lovelace from Hawaii. She's jumping and tipping. But she's wearing, by what I can figure out here, it looks like a diaper.
The women's outfits in the early 90s, and I should know, I went to college in the early 90s and watched it. with my own eyes were just unbelievably awful.
These are not
to today's.
These are not buns. Okay, they were wearing spandex. It was kind of the spandex buns transition time. But this is supposedly buns, but it's baggy and looks super absorbent with a nice elastic waistband. This is something that one of your kids is going to be putting on, not something you should be wearing in a college match. Daniel Scott Ahuda in here. Then Daniel Scott, Allison Weston, who played on the national team for a long time, Nebraska. Daniel Scott from Long Beach. Man, the pictures in here are great. Annette Buckner, UCLA.
Nettie.
South region predictions, Texas, Florida, Louisiana State, Kentucky, Georgia was the call there. And then the fashion show. Think about all the companies that are in here. Listen to the companies. Sun Sports, Sandman Sports Gear, Earth Air Waterwear, Primitive Prints, Red Sand, Reebok, Momentum, Nike, Side Out, VB Rags, all with their own pages. You mentioned the VB Rags ad. It's Jose Loyola and Brian Lewis. Louis with a full head of hair, very little of it gray, and Loyola with a giant zit on his forehead.
There needed to be some airbrushing going on there. I mean, was technology not that good then? Or?
Forget the airbrush. Someone in the studio should have told him, you got that eye up there. Take care of that thing, will you? Yeah, Geeter, give that a look. But lots of fantastic pictures in there. Red Sand, of course, went on to huge success. You like that, Geeter?
Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's not a good look for you. It's not a good look. Red Sand. Boy, what about all these companies?
Sandman
Sports Gear.
Barney, I have
Troy
a bad question.
Tanner. Yeah.
You know, you can go on sportsillustrated.com and you can order any old issue. Can you do that with Volleyball Mag? Nope.
No. You know what? Here's the inside scoop on that. Volleyball Mag, when it was bought, it was one or two sales ago. Some guy got ticked off, didn't think I was getting a good deal or something. I can't remember the exact reason. Went in and destroyed much of the archives.
What happened?
He just got ticked, and he ripped them up, burned them, shredded them, gone. So people out there who've been collecting Volleyball Magazine, you have a more complete collection than really exists professionally now. You've got it out there.
We get a name of that guy? Love to have him on the show.
So we can visit him?
Yeah, I just want to get
him
on
the show.
We can
send like a volleyball enforcement crowd over there to visit him. Pass that magazine back over there, Jeremy.
That guy's a full Zeke.
Yeah, that's not cool, man. You lose the heritage of the sport. It's just not good. So we've got stuff that goes back to the early 90s. And really, this is the heyday right here. This is the great stuff. Got a whole balance exercise by Adrian Crook, a name that was big back then. Tom Hoff used to work with him in college, U.S. Olympian. I actually got his name from my uncle. Go work with him, do these kinds of stuff. I just wasn't into it at the time. Probably would have been good, maybe good for my knees. Who knows? All kinds of secrets.
B.J. Evans is saying they have 3 or 4 copies of each.
Good.
That's good.
Good
to know. So they're out there somewhere.
They're out there. People have them. But anyway, if you get a chance.
Yeah, just be nice, though, for fans to be able to be like, you know what, I'm gonna see what this 1993 issue these guys are talking about is about, so I'm going to buy it, and you can't do it.
This
kind of a bummer.
This is a fun mag right there. Oh, Geeter.
Is there?
We've got your friend on the line here, guy you work with quite a bit. Unless you have to go.
Who's that? Ben?
Ben.
Hi, Ben. I do have to go, but I'd like to say hi to Ben.
Our next guest, we've had some good questions on the show here about cutting volleyball, how decisions are made, who's put on when. He's an editor for Echo Entertainment. He's been responsible for editing World League for the past 3 years. And we're pleased to bring him into the show and get him out of his cave that he has to operate in at Echo Entertainment. Maybe he's standing outside in the sun, we hope, in the valley.
No, it's too hot.
Are you on Eminence Front?
Yep. Welcome, Benjamin Weintraub. Ben.
Hi, guys. Hey.
Thanks for calling in. Thanks for spending the time.
Can you hear me?
Talk about the process of acquiring a tape and prepping it technically before you even get to the voiceover part.
Are we talking World League? Because I did so much AVP back in the day. And FIVB, but we were talking just the World League shows that we recently did.
Let's talk current, and then we can go into the archives.
Okay. Hi to everybody. Hi, Geeter. I didn't know you were going to be on this.
Hi, Ben.
I get tapes from all over the world and bring them. Basically, I'm at the mercy of of some broadcaster in Poland or in Puerto Rico or wherever, and I get these tapes in whatever condition that they shoot them in, and I'm responsible for making a TV show out of it, basically.
Yeah, there's been a lot of complaints about, in particular, the Puerto Rico footage, which came into the studio in what can be best described as poor internet quality.
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, they might as well have shot it on VHS tape back in the day and sent it in. And,
some interesting issues with last year at World League China, where they were shooting people's sneakers and whip panning across the screen. As an editor, when you're given that, I mean, you're just making the best of it.
Yeah, you can only do so much. My job is just to make it as watchable and as seamless as possible. And you know, when you and Paul voice over it. Paul Sunderland, who I saw yesterday, by the way, on the diving show that we did. When we have you guys voice it, it makes it seamless, so you can't really tell. It seems like you guys were actually there and all that stuff. But it could be really difficult when, you know, you got countries who don't really know how to produce volleyball or anything for that matter, and then they give you, you know, crap essentially.
Yeah.
You have to make it work, but. It's a challenge.
Yeah, talk
it's
about.
Like, it's not like when Hugh. It's not like when Hugh and Phil go out and produce them, and it's all perfect.
Hugh Arian, your boss.
My boss.
Yeah.
I hope it's listening.
Talk about the choices that are made. So for this year, for World League, you have an hour and a half for each.
Right.
And if you have a three-set match, it's fine. But if you have five sets, there's a lot of choices that have to be made about content. And in particular, we had a question about the controversy that went on, Brazil and Russia in the finals. There was a bad call and some referees and some yelling at it. And what turned out is that there was a big, long delay in the middle. But then at the end, there was a little bit of arguing. And we ended up only showing the arguing at the end. And it looked like the Brazilians just kind of went off the deep end for no reason. But talk about some of the storytelling issues and continuity problems that you guys encountered.
Yeah, that's a really good point. If it were any other, I don't want to say any other sport, but sometimes, you know, sports could just, you know, if it's a live show, it could just run until the match is over. Like a basketball game doesn't have to be done at 8 o'clock. It's done and when it's done. But for volleyball, we have to, you know, I'm given a window of time that I have to get the show in. So if it goes five sets, I have time to show, you know, two and a half of those sets or three sets, so we have to pick up time. But in reference to the controversy that you were just talking about, yeah, I have to cut away from it and then pick it up at a point where you can't tell any time was lost. And then that brings in issues of why people are arguing about stuff that we didn't show. But you guys in the voiceover, I think that was you with Kevin Wong, right? Kind of glossed it over in a way that it works, but yeah, that happens. You know, it's, also we this is kind of along the same lines. We pull out timeouts too. So when like Alan Knipe will call the timeout or the other coach calls the timeout, we don't have time to, you know, we can't have a timeout. So I have to basically eliminate that timeout. And that begs the question, well, why isn't this coach calling a timeout now? What's wrong with him? You know,
you lose some of the continuity, some of the coaching styles and strategy that comes into when to call timeouts.
Exactly. And, you know, I remember specifically there was one instance where Alan Knipe, well, you know, I think the U.S. lost 5 points in a row or whatever, or maybe 7 points in a row, and, you know, perfect time to call a timeout and to you know, get the guys back on board. And then and when you watch the TV show, there was no timeout. And, you know, any volleyball fan would wonder why there wasn't a timeout there. Right? Am I right about that?
Oh, definitely. Hey, Ben, take us back to some of the archives, some of the longer stuff, and give it our listeners a history of how long you've been cutting volleyball and some of the differences that you've noticed going from AVP up to today.
Well, you know, when I started with Echo 12 years ago, we had the AVP contract then, and that was when it was just starting to become a really big sport. And then by like 2002, 2003, it was like the heyday for us.
Heyday of the second. Yeah.
Well, heyday of like not the classic heyday, but like a different heyday, like when it was on NBC a lot, and you know, Carrie and Misty, and you know, and Karch was still playing great, and it was a lot of fun to cut it back then because it had a really high profile, and then I moved on to do FIVB Beach, the international tour, right? What they call that? I guess just the Swatch FIVB tour that Geezer we did. Those shows were a lot of fun. Those were like magazine style shows that had features, interviews with players, interviews with coaches, mascots, the fun girls, and then we'd get into the story of the tournament, and I'd have to condense all of that to 1 hour. So what I would have to do is take the final match, if it was, you know, Brazil versus China or whatever, two person against two person. That was just a lot of fun. We'd have to choose where to pick up the match, kind of. You know, we pick it up in the third set, and it's, you know, Carrie and Misty against the Chinese team, and it's tied at 7 going, you know, just we could make up drama kind of like that. So it was fun. And then we just started doing World League, which was indoor, which was really my first time doing indoor volleyball. I was always only edited and worked on beach. And it took me a while to really get into indoor. I thought my first impressions of indoor were there's too many people on the court. They're like all bumping into each other. Yeah. And why are there so many people out there? Because I'm used to just, you know, 2 against 2. I've never even worked on 4-man. I don't even know what that would be like. But it's fun. I love the sport, and I love editing it. It's something that we at Echo always seem to do something with volleyball. Even last year we did this thing called the Corona Light U.S. Open of Beach Volleyball. That was with Karch. Karch was one of the analysts on it. I don't know if you guys saw that.
Yeah, I think that aired on Ion Sports.
Yeah, it was fun, you know. That was trying to get back to the style of just pickup games on the beach. You know, there weren't any grandstands or just people sitting on towels watching it. You know, it was just trying to get back to the old days, which is fun.
Now, how much do you find yourself interested in volleyball? I know one of your coworkers there, Nate, who works with us a lot when we're doing the voiceover, actually attended his very first volleyball match, indoor volleyball match, down at Long Beach for World League this past year, and he's been getting volleyball lessons and stuff in there and instruction and learning about the sport. How much do you find yourself thinking about volleyball now and knowing more than you probably ever thought you would?
I definitely know more than I thought I would. You know, you guys both know me and know my physical abilities or lack of, and you could probably imagine. I mean, I'm an indoor kind of guy. I'm a musician. I'm a TV editor. So you're not going to catch me out there on the court. Nathan, the guy you mentioned, is like a tall guy. He's like 6'2", 6'3". He can handle himself out there. But I love this sport. Just I'll watch it now anytime. But really, if I'm flipping around, like one of the shows that really catches my eye whenever I'm channel surfing is the shows where I think, Geeter, it's you and Sinjin and Stoklos and all the guys sitting on the beach talking about an old match.
Yeah, it's interesting classics.
Love that show.
And Geeter actually had to leave. He's actually gone from the chair. We're just looking at a chair and a microphone sitting there now with headphones and his leftover coffee.
Oh, Geeter's gone? He got bored of me?
No, he had to take off. Yeah, he has another gig. Geeter's always going somewhere. But yeah, the AVP Classics is definitely a good show. It seems like Libero is the place for you, Ben, if you were going to join the ranks.
Yeah. I don't understand the Libero position quite. Why it has a different name? Is it like a sweeper in soccer? Is it just kind of like one of those?
All right, we could spend a long time on that. But what I'd like to know from you is, do you find yourself yelling at the screen now? Do you find yourself coaching? Like you've watched all these great coaches and all these great matches, indoor, outdoor, and all this stuff you've seen. Are there ever times where you're, what are you doing? What? Come on, I know what to do in this situation. Call a timeout or something.
Maybe a little bit of that. I'm more of the type that that ball was in. Why aren't they reviewing that? Or, you know, one of the things that I always used to wonder about with volleyball was when we would shoot the matches and a ball would be, there'd be an argument about whether a ball was in or out. And, you know, we have camera guys right there, and I'm wondering why, you know, one of the players doesn't run up to the camera guy and be like, go back and play that again and show, you know, the referee that was in. But that doesn't happen. I don't really worry about coaching. It's still above me. The whole thing is still above me. I don't really, you know, understand the whole outside inside. You know, with beach, I do. I guess like the whole idea of who you're serving and or when to go over on two and all that stuff. I think that stuff's really interesting. But you know, I'm more of a spectator. But it's a fun sport to edit. It definitely is, especially well, beach volleyball because there's a lot of girls to look at and stuff.
Huh. Well, hey, Ben, we know you know what you're doing when you're cutting it together, so one of these days we hope you get out there and try it. Thanks so much for spending some time here on the show and educating our audience about what it really takes to get volleyball on television inside of the time allotted. Thanks, Ben.
I appreciate it, Kevin, and have a great rest of the show.
All right. We'll talk to you again soon. There, Decker.
Bye-bye. Yeah.
Benjamin Weintraub, been working volleyball for a long time, Jeremy.
I like that the true point came out. He liked editing beach volleyball because of the girls.
Well, who doesn't? I mean, they have better atmosphere. We know why. I mean, yeah, there's the beer and there's the beach and the sun, but let's be honest. It's the opposite sex, whether you're male or female. Everybody out there is hot. I won't say it again.
I was waiting.
It'll be part of the Open.
Because the one you sent me was not the one.
I don't even remember where that was.
I remember
find
where it was.
The point where I'm commenting on the men of the ABP.
I will find it.
Or beach volleyball.
We can all admire beauty, Kevin, male or female. It's okay.
I am universally appealing, and I don't mind. You can cut that one out. That's like Phil's. I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
You mean this one?
Jeremy.
Did you mute
me
again?
Day.
Did you mute me again,
think
Kevin?
So. No,
I can't argue that we're the best team in the world.
Or this one?
I love beating Brazil.
Or this one?
They're just cocky volleyball players, and they have the right to be. They're great players, but
no, they have no right
just,
to be.
so much fun to give them a nice beatdown.
I'm sorry, Phil. You're right on so many things in what you just said there, but you are not right in the fact that they deserve to be. Brazil should shut the hell up, and I love making them shut up. And I love watching Phil making them shut up, and Clay, and Reed, and Riley, and Loy, and all those guys. I love watching them make Brazil shut up.
We need to get a Brazilian player on the show.
Yeah, we do.
Get their take.
Jiba speaks good English. We could have Jiba. We could have Dante. We'll get there.
Let's make that happen, Kevin.
International. Hey, big thanks for this show, for getting it on the air. Volleyball Magazine, AVCA. Special thanks again to Hurley for the NetLive t-shirts. I see lots of people are getting out there and ordering them. Hey, people, I know it's $30 for a t-shirt. Really, what it is, it's $30 for this show to support what we do because you love what we do every week, getting up here, putting it together, bringing you the best people from all around the world of volleyball. And you get a killer shirt to go along with it.
And it's a premium shirt, too. Like, you'll be wearing this shirt for years. It's not going to get destroyed in the wash.
This is not a beefy tee with a crappy silk screen on it. Okay?
They are tagless.
Tagless, premium quality, heather look to them with a nice logo that's been, you know, digitally printed, not silk screen.
And can I say this again? I DJ for a living, so I have to look cool all the time.
Yes.
I wear the shirts.
Right on.
That should say enough right there.
And you wouldn't wear the shirt.
You're absolutely right. I would
tell
you.
That's right. So I think people out there who have been getting them have been very happy, and we appreciate the comments out there that folks have been putting up. Melissa, Mike, who am I trying to think of?
Gardhoff.
Yeah.
Actually, I'll have to look back and see if he actually ordered a shirt yet. I'm not sure if he did.
Oh, he's in. He's in.
I mean, he's saving up for the 40 he's about to buy.
That's right. So, hey, good stuff there. Great stuff from Alan Knipe. Thanks to him. Thanks to Benjamin Weintraub for joining us. Thanks to Vinny Lopes for calling in offtheblockblog.wordpress.com. Check him out for information. Thanks, big thanks to Michael Sonheimer. And we look forward to having Michael Sonheimer and Holly McPeak back for the College Volleyball Weekly in 2 weeks' time. Thanks to the ABCA for sending over that poll and that appearing debut here on the show.
It's a good show today, Kevin.
It was fun. It was fun. I'll be in Alaska next week, cruising on a boat, eating lots of food, trying to gain at least 10 pounds.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm going to hit the dessert tray hard.
So what does that mean?
That means there will be no program because we can't trust Geeter with his own computer in here to run anything, although you would be fine. We can't expect you to carry Geeter entirely.
True. I wish he was here to kind of comment on that, but...
He'll be hearing it later. We'll hear about it in a couple weeks.
Exactly.
All right. Very good. The Net Live here on the VolleyballNetwork.com. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Be good. Play some volleyball. Summer's just about over. Back to school pretty soon, so get out there and play some outdoor before it's time to only play indoor. And do it all. Everything that you can do to support this sport.
And I'm going to end the show with a remix I did that's on my mix that's available today, Kevin, at DJRouchet.com.
This is it. If you missed the pool party in Fullerton yesterday, now you'll feel like you were there. For Geeter and Jeremy, I'm Kevin, The Net Live. See ya.
Enjoy the party. It's okay with me if you don't have that much to say. Hey!